KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Having California's presidential primary in February may have taken some of the luster off of the June ballot, but there's still plenty at stake come June the 3rd, starting with the statewide ballot propositions. This year, there are two dueling propositions that focus on the rights of property owners and the government's power of eminent domain. But one of the two measures has a provision that would also phase out rent control, including rent control in San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, and San Jose. So whether you're a renter, a property owner, or a landlord, stay tuned for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. You might be feeling a little weary about politics these days, including the seemingly endless Democratic presidential primary. But guess what? On June the 3rd, we have another election to consider, and there are a number of items on the ballot that could have a very direct impact on daily life. Take Propositions 98 and 99, two rival ballot measures that focus on the rights of property owners and the government's power of eminent domain. But one of the two measures has an especially interesting twist. Besides limiting the power of eminent domain, it would also phase out rent control, including rent control measures in the Bay Area. Here's what's at stake. The usual way of thinking about eminent domain is the government's ability to acquire private property for public purposes, say schools, parks, or roads. But in 2005, the United States Supreme Court ruled that private property could also be taken and handed over to another private property, say for something like a housing development. That ruling sparked many states to enact laws limiting powers of eminent domain, and that brings us to this year's June ballot and two rival statewide ballot measures. Both Propositions 98 and 99 would limit government's eminent domain power, but one of the two propositions, Prop 98, goes much further. It would also do away with rent control in California. Now, what's rent control have to do with eminent domain and property rights? Well, that's what we're going to dig into in the hour ahead. Joining us to do that, Michael Shaw. He's legislative director for the National Federation of Independent Business, one of a number of organizations that supports Proposition 98. Again, 98 is the one that includes the rent control phase-out provision. Mr. Shaw, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on, Dave.
Happy to have you with us. Joining us as well is Ted Gullickson. He's office manager for the San Francisco Tenants Union, one of many organizations that opposes Proposition 98. He supports the rival Proposition 99, which would limit eminent domain power but does not include anything on rent control. Mr. Gullickson, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you both. Really interesting topic. Let's sort of sketch out the broader issue of eminent domain first and then tackle this particularly interesting part of Proposition 98, which targets rent control in particular. On the broader issue of eminent domain, going back to the Supreme Court case that I referenced, Mr. Gullickson, there's sort of broad agreement, it seems, on both sides of this question that something needed to be done after the 2005 case, at least in many states. What is it that you think should happen that curls back some of the power of eminent domain?
Well, I think we need some form of eminent domain reform, which Proposition 99 actually does. It's a very simple measure. It says you cannot use eminent domain for a single-family home owner-occupied and turn it over to a private developer. That's what the Kelo case was all about. What Prop 98 is, though, is a very deceptive measure, which is trying to use eminent domain and the homeowners' sort of cry for eminent domain reform as a way to bring in a whole hidden agenda in this particular case attacking rent control, land use regulations, environmental regulations. So they're not after real eminent domain reform. They have a much larger agenda, which they're going after and trying to hide it behind eminent domain reform.
And on the more expansive version of eminent domain reform, your measure, the measure that you're supporting, Mr. Shaw, Proposition 98, walk us through the basic argument, why you want to take this beyond the sort of narrower reform that Mr. Gullickson is advocating.
Well, the issue at hand is private property rights, and Californians, among the highest of any state in the nation, have been victims of government abuse of eminent domain, the taking of private property to transfer to another private owner. In many cases, it's small businesses that are being taken to provide land for larger commercial development that includes big box retail stores, and really in some ways destroying the culture of our communities. Additionally, the Proposition 98 goes to protect the ability of those businesses and homeowners and others who have their property taken to ensure that they get fair compensation for temporary losses in business activity, relocation expenses, and other things that are typically not covered under the current law. Our issue with Proposition 99 is that it simply provides a split-roll property rights system in the state of California by limiting protection to homeowners, and in that case, to single-family owner-occupied homes. So investment property, vacation homes, and even those who are living in apartments would not receive the same protection as they would under Proposition 98.
Well, let's dig into that part of it a little bit further, and then we'll zero in on the rent control provision. On that point, Mr. Gullickson, yours does limit protection to just single-family dwellers, as Mr. Shaw suggests. Why not have other kinds of private holdings be protected from private takings, be that an apartment building or a vacation home?
Well, that's what the Kelo case was all about. It was private owner-occupied single-family homes which were being taken over in New London, Connecticut for a private developer. And so we want to address that issue immediately. Perhaps down the road, maybe there'll be further eminent domain reforms, but I think it's important that it just start off simple. We saw eminent domain reform last year, supposed eminent domain reform with Prop 90, and as with Prop 98, they put in a whole bunch of garbage with that. And what that does is it gets the voters to look at all of that, those side issues, and they reject the eminent domain reform. So if they really want eminent domain reform, they need to do it in a simple way and not something that has a whole bunch of other issues tied to it.
So is your argument essentially, let's fix the problem that needs to be fixed, not
exactly.
Come up with a solution for a problem that doesn't exist?
Right, and don't put other stuff in there that's going to turn voters off, because then we'll never get eminent domain reform.
Well, let's talk about the other stuff then, Mr. Shaw. And obviously the part of this that's the most controversial and has the most eyebrows raised in the Bay Area in particular and other urban areas around the state is the provision about rent control. On the surface, it does seem like, well, now what's that about? Why slip in something about rent control in this provision about amending powers of eminent domain? So connect the dots for us from your point of view. Why does doing away with rent control connect to this broader issue?
Well, Dave, thank you for the opportunity. The issue here is not in any way deceptive, or there's no hidden agenda, as the opponents would like to say. It's really straightforward and simple. This is about private property rights, and one of the ways we know that government can and will most likely do, should their power of eminent domain be restricted, is to pursue other ways to force property owners into selling their property. Eminent domain translates into rent control in the sense that if the government can control what a investor or what a property owner can receive on their investment or their land, then they can decrease the value of that land and make it less expensive for the city to purchase or to take in the case of eminent domain. And particularly if Proposition 99 passed, it would essentially preserve the status quo, particularly when it comes to small businesses, places of worship, and apartment dwellings.
So is your view essentially that rent control is so onerous that it needs to be taken care of because it makes owning property that much less profitable for people? It's in your view, rent control is something that really essentially diminishes someone's basic property rights?
Well, that is true. And the other point is that rent control has not been proven to work in terms of providing affordable housing for low-income families. In many areas in Berkeley and Oakland and other places, we've seen a sort of gentrification of the cities as rent control was put into place. Over time, affordable housing has not, rent control has not proven to provide affordable housing. It's actually done quite the opposite. It props up rent and maintains a higher level of rent, and as a result, what I understand, you know, those landlords are actually being much more strict in their approach to evaluating potential tenants.
Well, I want to hear Mr. Gullickson's view on rent control and open up the whole debate as to whether or not rent control works or not. But before we get to that, I just want to, in terms of sort of truth in advertising, I just want to go a beat further on the two measures so that we can keep them straight. Would it be fair then to say, Mr. Shaw, that the measure that you're supporting, Proposition 98, is sort of eminent domain on steroids, that it's basically a property rights measure, not just an eminent domain measure. Fairly or not, it is something that is broader, right?
No, actually, Dave, I believe that eminent domain and private property rights are really one and the same. It's the ability of property owners to make decisions about what to do with their land. If they own a home and they would like to rent it out, or if they have an apartment building and they'd like to rent the units, you know, it's their ability to make those decisions. Right now, the situation we have is the government is, in many cases, making those decisions for property owners, including homeowners, small business owners, in places of worship. And so Proposition 98 simply seeks to address the issue of private property rights. Eminent domain is, the highly featured, element here in the case that that is government abuse of power. And so we're seeking to restrict that to what eminent domain was intended for, which is public uses, so schools,
right,
roads, and water projects and such.
Ted Gullickson, on the sort of truth in advertising question, make your contrary argument, I assume, about what 98 really is.
Well, 85% of the funders of Prop 98 are large landlords, and what Prop 98 does is it zeroes right in on rent control. There's different levels to Prop 98. The most explicit part of it is that it prohibits rent control. It also prohibits inclusionary affordable housing programs where cities require developers to build X percent of the units as affordable. Now, rent control clearly works. There's 180,000 units in San Francisco covered under rent control. If we lose rent control, as we would lose rent control with Prop 98, this city would be unaffordable to the vast majority of people who are now living here. Seniors depend on rent control. Families depend on rent control. Low and moderate income people depend on rent control. The workers who make this city happen depend on rent control. If we lose it, San Francisco is going to change drastically into a city far different from what it is today. We will see the people who work here and make the city function and give the city its character and diversity will all end up out of San Francisco at some point. So it will be a disaster for San Francisco.
Well, let's plow into the arguments about rent control, because as Mr. Shaw suggests, there are people who take different views on this. You've just outlined and made the case for why rent control is a valuable thing. But let me come back at you on some of the things that are sometimes brought up in opposition to it. One is that because of rent control, landlords are sometimes less willing to make improvements in their property. They're less willing to expand. Their landowners or developers are less willing to build them because they're not going to be as profitable.
Well, we need to be realistic about what rent control actually is. Rent control is a basic consumer protection which just sets price controls which prevent landlords from rent gouging on the apartments. In San Francisco, as with most rent control laws, landlords get regular annual rent increases anytime they do improvements to the building, so-called capital improvements, put on a new roof, put in a new water heater, that sort of thing. They can pass 100% of the costs on to tenants in the form of a rent increase. When their operating and maintenance expenses go up, taxes, maintenance costs, payroll costs, whatever, they can pass that on directly to tenants. In San Francisco, for example, a landlord can increase the rent on a particular tenant over 20% a year if they can justify, if they, in fact, have incurred those expenses. So it just prevents rent gouging that happens when the real estate market is going crazy, as we've seen it happen in the last 10 years or so, and stops these landlords from giving 100% rent increases to some retired widow.
Ted Gullickson joins us this hour. He's the manager of the San Francisco Tenants Union. Joining us as well is Michael Shaw, legislative director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Mr. Shaw, on that point, you heard Ted Gullickson make the point that it's not, rent control should not be considered rent freeze. People, landlords, can indeed get increases year in and year out.
Well, Dave, If I could take a moment and address something that Mr. Gullickson said earlier, I'd appreciate it. He mentioned large landowners making the contributions to our campaign. You know, I would not take total disagreement with his point. However, I would clarify that the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association is the largest contributor to the campaign, followed by the California Farm Bureau Federation. So the farms would certainly compose large blocks of land, and therefore could be considered large landowners. But to that, you know, to your point, it has, you know, it's clearly the case that there are some modest increases in rent that are allowed. But the problem with rent control is that it is not functioning and providing affordable housing. People who stay in those units continue to see those modest increases in their rent. However, those seeking to occupy new units see their rent go up. And when a unit becomes vacant, the owner is allowed to reset the rent at market rate, in which case the owner of the building is going to seek to get the largest rent that they possibly can, and they're going to do that in a way that may not enable some people to come into those units. So what this does is it ties people to that particular unit. And particularly when we're talking about a 21st century economy where jobs are moving and people are moving frequently, rent control really isn't providing the type of protections that the proponents of it claim that it would. And in fact, it's actually in many ways benefiting those who could certainly afford to pay more. So you have, in many cases, wealthy individuals or at least middle income to higher income families occupying these units, and it's not in any way restricted to a need, an economic need.
Well, on that, Ted Gullickson, there was a survey done, I believe, in San Francisco 5 years ago that said something like a quarter of all rent-controlled apartments in San Francisco were held by people of quite high income, income of $100,000 or more. So it is true, is it not, that you can't have this sort of odd and somewhat inequitable situation where within the same apartment building, someone who's been there a long time, might have quite a high income, is protected and has these sort of modest increases, whereas once an apartment becomes vacant, as Mr. Shaw suggests, someone else moving in who might well be of lesser means is now confronted with a very high income. So respond to that question that's often brought up about the inequities that rent control pervades.
Well, I think that study was done by a landlord group, so I'm not sure that that is actually accurate. But, you know, I think the fact is that in San Mateo and the cities down towards the peninsula, down the peninsula towards San Jose, which do not have rent control, have much higher rents on their vacant units than San Francisco does. So very clearly, San Francisco is keeping rents lower through rent control. And the fact that the landlord can raise the rent at the point of a vacancy is just another example of how rent control is not a huge burden on landlords, and there is no need to try to repeal it statewide. It is just not a huge burden on landlords.
Because they have that option.
They have that option. They get many rent increases to go after that is just unnecessary. And I think we need to also talk about what this measure does to other tenant protections. In San Francisco, it gets rid of the just cause eviction protections, including prohibitions on evictions of certain senior and disabled tenants. It gets rid of condo conversion laws. It gets rid of extended notice periods. It gets rid of relocation benefits. So Prop 98 across the board will make things difficult for tenants, in particular in rent-controlled jurisdictions, but all across California. And none of these changes are necessary. They're just going to hurt tenants. They're going to hurt families, going to hurt seniors. Groups like AARP, the California League of Women Voters, and non-tenant groups are looking at this and rejecting Prop 98 because they see the harm that will come to these tenants and especially seniors.
Give me an example, and then I'd like Mr. Shaw to respond to it, of the kind of thing that you foresee happening, Ted Gullickson, when you talk about eviction protection, for example. Give me a circumstance of someone who is protected now and who would not be if 98 became law.
In San Francisco, most of the no-fault evictions, and that's what I'm talking about, no-fault evictions, are being done for condo conversions, for example. Way disproportionately, they're affecting senior and disabled tenants. Nearly 80% of the buildings where tenants get evicted for subsequent condo conversions have at least one senior or disabled tenant in them.
And how are they protected now?
Those tenants are protected from certain evictions, but not the ones being used for the condo conversion. What's going to happen to them, though, is more importantly, is that the city's condo conversion laws are going to go out. Prop 98 will result in them being thrown out, which limits the number of conversions which can happen in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and is going to mean that that tenants' units are going to be able to be immediately converted to condominiums. Tenants are going to be immediately kicked out of those units. And as I say, they're mostly senior and disabled tenants.
Michael Shaw, on that point?
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Gullickson, I'd like to know where in the initiative he believes it says that this has anything to do with current renter protection laws, because there is nothing in the initiative relevant to that issue other than the issue of rent control. And so, I mean, that's one of the scare tactics that opponents of Proposition 98, who are coincidentally the same group supporting Proposition 99, that's the same type of thing that they throw up all the time, and they've yet to be able to point to a specific part of the initiative that supports that allegation.
Can you point to a specific part of it, Mr. Gullickson?
Yes, when you look at Prop 98, there are layers and layers of deception. And when you dig into it, what comes right out at you is that it prohibits rent control and it prohibits inclusionary affordable housing. But they have also done a greatly expanded definition of what are takings. And they include in that the associated property rights, the transfer of economic benefit, and define that in a way so that virtually any regulation of what a landlord can do with their property is going to be ruled unconstitutional. And those regulations include condo conversion limitations. If a landlord is being told by the city of San Francisco that you cannot convert your building to a condominium, then that is going to be unconstitutional.
So what concerns you are the softness of the language or the expansiveness of it? There's not something specific that says we're going to do away with protections. You're just arguing that because it's not clear enough or clean enough, that would be possible?
It's clean and clear enough. They use the legal language to make sure that all of those regulations of private property will be thrown out. It's not debatable. It's in the section defining what private use is and what takings are, and there's just absolutely no debate that all of these will be thrown out. Once again, they're simply trying to hide their real agenda behind other stuff, and they simply don't have the guts to just come out and put on a rent control repeal measure, flat and simple, and let the voters choose on that.
Michael Shaw, let me give you just a brief response, and then we'll take it back up after the break. We have to break in about 30 seconds, so let me give you a first crack at it, and then we'll return in a moment.
Well, first off, I mean, the opponents of Proposition 98 would argue that, what Mr. Gullickson has, that this certain things. However, and they continue to point to this quote-unquote clear language, but if it's so clear, the Attorney General and the Legislative Analyst Office would have seen that in the initiative, and neither of those impartial parties have indicated that either of those cases, the quote-unquote violation of renter protections or other such things, are included in Proposition 98. So clearly this is a scare tactic that the Proposition 99 supporters are throwing up.
All right, we'll come back and pick up more on that topic when we return. We want to get your calls and participation in our topic this morning, too. So you can join us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Back with more about our discussion on eminent domain and rent control in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, two rival ballot propositions that will be on the June 3rd ballot, Propositions 98 and 99. Both deal with the question of eminent domain and limiting government's power of eminent domain. But one of them, Proposition 98, includes a provision that would also phase out rent control in cities around California, including in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, and San Jose. Our guest this hour to talk about this topic, Michael Shaw, legislator legislative director for the National Federation of Independent Business, an organization that supports Proposition 98. That's the one with the rent control phase-out provision. And Ted Gullickson, office manager for the San Francisco Tenants Union. He opposes 98, supports the other version of eminent domain reform called Proposition 99. We welcome your calls and participation in our program, too. Here's the number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. We'll take your calls in just a moment. But Michael Shaw, right before the break, you were outlining why 98 does not have the provisions in it that Mr. Gullickson was arguing that it did, those in terms of protecting various tenant rights. So would you be willing to say then categorically that if you support Proposition 98, nothing in 98 is going to limit tenant protection?
Proposition 98 deals with private property rights, and the issue of rent control is one aspect of private property rights that that Proposition 98 specifically deals with. It does not invalidate other renter protections. Cities have a number of different avenues in which to provide affordable housing if they so choose. But affordable housing is really a community good, and to force one individual property owner to subsidize a number of other individuals is certainly not in line with the way we do the majority of our social welfare programs, and certainly is very much like eminent domain in the sense that governments essentially are subsidizing private development by large corporations by taking property from small businesses, homeowners, and farmers and places of worship.
I understand the point. I don't know, as I heard, though, anything categorical on your part about whether or not tenants can rest easy if 98 is passed, that they would have nothing to fear in terms of eviction law changing.
Proposition 98 only deals with the issue of rent control as it relates to private property rights.
Okay, quick beat on that, and then we'll get to our calls.
Well,
Ted Gullickson.
He says there's other avenues for providing affordable housing, and Prop 98 also explicitly outlaws inclusionary affordable housing programs. Renters and tenant groups and anyone who has read Prop 98 is scared to death by this measure.
Get to our callers next. Jason in Sacramento joins us first. Jason, go ahead. You're on.
Hi. When I was a student in San Francisco, I was fortunate enough to move into a rent control apartment with three other roommates. And I would have to say I was one of the lucky people to find off-campus housing and live in a nice neighborhood and be able to afford it. I think if it wasn't a rent-controlled apartment, I probably would have been paying an astronomical amount. And I can only imagine what the rents would be like now. I lived there in 2000, and I'm sure it's gone up quite a bit since then. So I don't know how people can afford to live in the city anymore.
Jason, thank you. Thanks for the call and observation. And that's what you hear, obviously, Michael Shaw, from lots of people, that if you don't have rent control, the Jasons of the world, young people starting out, people in college, people from diverse backgrounds, people who are coming into this community, that they're just not, that San Francisco is going to lose its basic flavor, culture, and diversity.
Well, I think that as we've seen in a number of cities around the Bay Area, Oakland and Berkeley in particular, the type of gentrification that occurs in those cities certainly tells a story that would counter what proponents say about the protection of cultural and ethnic diversity that they believe rent control is intended. In fact, specifically in Oakland's rent control provisions, it says one of the purposes is it's necessary in order to preserve cultural and ethnic diversity. However, over near 3+ decades since rent control was imposed in the city of Oakland, more than 24-25% of the African American population has left the city.
Well, that's the other side of this, Ted Gullickson, that San Francisco struggles to maintain its African American population, struggles for that matter to retain families with young children, that in that level you can't really make the argument, can you, that rent control has helped preserve those parts of our demography?
Oh, absolutely you can. That's what rent control has done. Rent control has slowed down the train of
gentrification.
So it'd be even
worse.
which and why the supporters of Prop 98 want to see rent control ended is because they want that gentrification to happen overnight, and they want San Francisco changed overnight. They want the African Americans out tomorrow. They want families out tomorrow. They want seniors, Latinos out tomorrow, not 10 years from now.
So are you arguing that this is a racist proposition, Proposition 98?
I don't think it's racist per se. I think it's anti anyone who is of low, moderate income, who is not rich, who is not wealthy, and they want to change San Francisco and other cities into just enclaves for the wealthy.
Michael Shaw.
It's easy for Mr. Gullickson and the opponents of Proposition 98 to allege that things would have happened faster had it not been for rent control, but the evidence clearly states that in spite of rent control, or perhaps because of rent control, the cultural and ethnic diversity in many of those places has been reduced. In Berkeley, there's actually a negative population growth because of the effects of rent control and other issues. And we see in many of these areas that individuals who get into rent-controlled units stay in rent-controlled units. And so there is an aging of the population and certainly not opening a lot of doors for others to come into that community and to revitalize it. So what we see with rent control is that it imposes this economic burden on certain property owners in order to provide what is a community good, and clearly it is not providing that community good. It's in fact having the opposite effect. And so there's no evidence to indicate that rent control is achieving the goals that it is claimed to support. And, you know, if Mr. Gullickson has some studies, I'd love to hear about that. But from what I've seen, you know, there have been, 50 or plus studies that have been done on this issue, and none of them have indicated anything positive about rent control. And various economists, that vast majority of economists, I should say, have criticized rent control. In fact, one prominent economist and columnist, Paul Krugman, referred to rent control as economic stupidity. So all of the evidence seems to be suggesting that rent control isn't working, and so Proposition 98 is designed to restore private property rights to all property owners, and in this case, rent control is one of those areas. Yeah. If governments value affordable housing and want to make sure that's available, then as a community, government can certainly support programs to make that happen.
I want to get back to our callers because lots of people want to chime in. So callers, hang with us for just a moment. But I want to get Ted Gullickson's response to that because it gets to the very heart of whose responsibility is it. Michael Shaw is raising two questions. One, where's the evidence that rent control has really helped preserve diversity? And secondly, I think he's also making the argument that it's not really landlords' responsibility. That's a broader public policy social question that shouldn't fall just on the shoulders of landlords.
Well, you know, he just admitted that he wanted people who are living in these communities now out and new people should be brought in. It's very clear that rent control works. There's equal numbers of studies on both sides, as there often are, but anyone who lives in San Francisco and in any of these communities which have rent control see that rent control keeps the diversity and the character of the city. Rent control is not any form of subsidy or anything like that. A subsidy is where someone actually writes a check, and people writing checks are tenants. Rent control is regulation of landlords who seek to profit off of a housing crisis. It stops those landlords, those extra greedy landlords, from raising rents by astronomical amounts on vulnerable tenants. And that's all it does.
To our callers again, Tim joins us next in San Francisco. Tim, go ahead.
Yes, I'm concerned about the implementation of this. Say, for instance, 98 passes on June 3rd. I am a tenant that under rent control here in San Francisco. What is the time scale? Would my landlord would it be implemented on January 1st of 2009? How would it go into effect? And would there be an appeal process? Can anybody
right.
look into the future?
Great question, Tim. Thanks for bringing us to the nuts and bolts of this. Because as I understand it, at least this is phased in, and people who are currently in rent-controlled property would be able to stay there under those provisions. But Michael Shaw, round out the answer, and we'll let Ted Gullickson chime in, too, if he disagrees.
Hey, Tim calling in to clarify that point. The issue here is what happens with rent control, and Dave, as you said, it phases out rent control. So it's important, and we need to be very specific about this, but any person who is currently occupying a unit that is under rent control will not be affected by Proposition 98.
Ever?
Until they choose to move.
Okay.
Once a unit is vacant, the rent control is lifted. That's not exactly, I mean, that's not totally unlike the situation that we have today, where if a unit is vacated, then the rent control is lifted until a new tenant comes in. However, this Proposition 98 would phase it out, rent control out over time by taking those vacant units and lifting the rent control.
So let me see if I've got this right, and Ted Gullickson, you can fill in on this part. If I live in apartment number 6 and I'm there right now, I continue to be protected. But once I leave apartment number 6, the next person who enters apartment number 6 would have no rent control protection at all. Is that right?
The effective date of 98 is June 4th. As of then, there will be no more rent-controlled units in California whatsoever. Now, for tenants who are in place, they still face great dangers. And probably the most largest danger is, as I noted before, that Prop 98 will wipe out condo conversion laws. A unit converted to a condominium is exempt from rent control under a pre-existing state law. So if these landlords are able, which they will be, to convert these units into condominiums, regardless of what Prop 98 says about current tenants, those tenants will lose their rent control.
You're making a kind of slippery slope argument, right?
Well, as I've said before, there's layers and layers to Prop 98. And, you know, besides that immediate danger, just imagine the motivation which landlords are going to have to drive tenants out in order to get that unit off of rent control permanently.
Right. But lest we not be clear to Tim's specific question, he wants to know the apartment that he's living in right now. If Proposition 98 passes on June the 3rd, it's not like the landlord can come in on June the 4th and say, guess what, Tim, your rent's gone up $500.
That's correct. But okay. The landlord will be able to immediately apply for condo conversion, and that might happen in 6 months.
Another caller wants to join us from the city of Oakland right now. Garrett is up next. Garrett, you're on.
Yes, I just wanted to share my perspective as a attorney for both tenants and landlords. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. You're on.
Yes, and what it really is with rent control in Oakland is a forced marriage because unless the tenant fails to pay rent or does something terrible that you can prove, you're stuck with that tenant forever. I mean, 10, 20, 30 years. And if you don't get along, if you have a personality conflict, or this tenant is causing trouble to all the other tenants, but you can't prove it, or you don't want to spend $5,000 or $10,000 going to court, you're stuck. And
so your argument, Garrett, about rent control is not so much on the financial side as it is the personal side?
Yeah, the emotional side just kills people. People become so angry, and they can't do a thing, and they've lost any power over their property, and it gets trashed all the time. So people like me, I owned 20 units at one time. I've sold 12 units. I only have 8 left. And I never raised rent, never on a sitting tenant, maybe once or twice. It was like 3%, because it's too complicated to figure out the rent control laws. I'm an attorney. Every couple of years, if I want to try to do a remodel or raise the rent, I have to go back and read the damn law. It's so complicated, and it's different from every city to every other city.
Garrett, thank you. Thanks for bringing in your perspective on this morning. I want to get Ted Gullickson your response, because you hear that a lot from people, that it's just so complicated and that you can't, even if someone is really not behaving very well, it's almost impossibly difficult to get that person out.
Well, that's very untrue, especially if it's a so-called for-fault eviction where a tenant is not paying the rent or is creating a nuisance or something like that. That eviction moves very quickly. It's very easy for tenants to get out, to landlords to evict those tenants. It's very quick and easy. In Oakland, they just recently got just cause eviction protection. So my guess is some landlords like the caller over there are used to the old system where they could just tell a tenant to leave with no reason whatsoever and that tenant would have to leave.
Some of our emails coming in. David writes, the argument against Proposition 98 is largely emotional, as Ted warns of, quote, disaster if San Francisco were to lose rent control. He essentially argues for preservation of the culture, namely that demographic, which would not be able to afford rents without control. And in this argument, he's being elitist.
I don't see why that is elitist to want to have a city that many, many, many people can live in.
To another caller this morning, let's go next to someone who wants to ask about the frequency of eminent domain. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. My name is Tim, and I'm a city planner, and I'm also kind of an artist. I have a band, Rocket Culture, and we wrote a song about rent control. But really, my question for Mr. Shaw, and Mr. Shaw, I've really never seen too many cases where private property is actually being taken and given over to other private property owners. Can you explain whether or not there really is, does the kind of the root problem actually exist in great deal, or is eminent domain mostly used for what its original intended purposes was intended?
Well, there are a number of cases in which I'd be happy to point to in which eminent domain has been used to take private property to transfer to another private owner. I'll use one example in Oakland. John Ravelli of Ravelli Tire Store and Auto House had his property taken as part of a redevelopment project. The project was a large commercial development, and his small tire shop was taken as a piece of that government scheme. The irony of the situation is that the project included, of all things, a Sears complete with a tire store. So, you know, clearly there's a number of other examples like that. I can point to another one in San Diego where a number of businesses, one in particular, a successful coffee and cigar store, was taken as part of a hotel project. The cruel reality of that situation in San Diego is that the hotel project was never built, and the land on which his successful business was located is now a parking lot. So there are a number of other examples. San Francisco and Hunters Point, there's a plan to take a number of properties in that area, some which include small businesses and others, as a part of that project down there.
But what's interesting listening to you recite those, Michael Shaw, is that they all do have to do with the question of eminent domain, not with rent control. And so it brings back, I guess, the question we started out earlier in the program talking about. Why tie this in? Why not have a straight up and down on the limits of eminent domain? And if we want to have a separate proposition on rent control, then so be it. Rosie writes in, as a number of other emailers have, if this measure was truly, as the title says, mostly about changing the eminent domain laws in California, why not make doing away with rent control an entirely separate proposition? Why hide it as it now appears hidden in Proposition 98?
Well, there's nothing hidden about the rent control element of Proposition 98. It's out there, and we're certainly not going around trying to hide that particular aspect of this initiative. It is relevant to the eminent domain issue, and as I believe I stated earlier, eminent domain is essentially government subsidizing other private individuals by taking from one private owner and giving to another. Rent control is a very similar situation in that you are having one individual property owner being forced by government to subsidize other private individuals. And particularly for something that's a community good, that's really not the type of government I think we want. The issue here is that rent control is one other way in which the private property rights of all Californians can be violated. If we can impose rent control on landowners, why can't we impose sales price control on homeowners?
Let me hold you there, if I might, so that we can get a couple of more callers engaged in our program this morning. Reggio in San Francisco is next. Go ahead.
Hi. So I'm a small landlord in San Francisco. I have three buildings with eight units, and I have two landlord viewpoints. The first is I purchased a building with two units, and the rents are so under market, and they know no. There's no chance of them ever covering my mortgage payment. My wife and I want to move in one of the units, and it has literally taken us a year and tens of thousands of dollars to get the tenant out. And both of my tenants are young, have very good jobs. One of them that we're trying to get out makes six figures, and we just, it's ridiculous. There's a provision in the law that says you pay $4,600, 60 days notice, and that you can own or move in. Well, that's great, except the problem is the tenant just doesn't move out the day you're supposed to, and we have to hire attorneys and fight. And it's just really, really unfair that all we're trying to do is move into a unit in a building that we've purchased to make our home.
Richard, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the call. It's a nice concrete example of the objections many landlords have. Ted Gullickson, respond.
Well, it's hard to respond to the specifics of that case. Usually when a tenant fights, most tenants, when landlord tells them to do something, actually do it. When tenants fight an eviction in court, they perhaps don't believe that he really is going to move in, because owner move-in evictions get used a lot by landlords who instead want to raise the rents. And so if they're contesting it in court, you know, you have to look at the facts of the case.
But would you accept, though, that stories like Reggio's happen, that there are those difficulties? I've certainly heard this story. We all have many, many times, at how complicated, how time-consuming it can be. And the frustrations that he seems to evidence seem valid and real.
And let me tell you that for every one time you hear that case, you hear 20, 30 cases of seniors who are probably illegally kicked out of their home. So the abuses of the tenants are far, far greater than any quote-unquote abuses of the landlords.
Annie writes in something that we should get to that we have not touched on yet, and she writes, I live in a mobile home park in San Jose, and I can assure you, judging by the cars and driveways, among other things here, there's not a soul here who's living high off the hog. My husband and I both work hard and contribute to our company. We would not be able to live in Silicon Valley without rent control. Ted Gullickson, this is another aspect of this that, as I say, we've not touched on yet, because the rent control provisions here also apply to mobile home parks.
Yeah, there are many, many, many mobile home parks in California which have rent control. And most of those mobile home parks are lived in by senior citizens, retired workers. And this will be particularly onerous on them, because if I have to move from my apartment, it's a matter of packing up some boxes and getting a friend with a pickup truck. But these mobile home parks, they own the quote-unquote mobile home, which is not really mobile, yet the landlord owns the land underneath it. And if the landlord is able to raise their rent by any amount, as Prop 98 would allow, it's very difficult for them to simply pack up and leave, and they're pretty much the landlord is essentially in a position where they can extort them.
Michael Shaw, a quick rejoinder on the mobile home park situation.
Well, the situation is, you know, private property rights are one of the most valuable rights we have as Americans, and the decisions that landlords, property owners make, you know, should not be infringed upon in this way by the government. So their ability to make a return on their investment is something that is important. And it goes to the point why I argued earlier that in many cases rent control can actually lead to inflated rents, is that if you are limiting the ability of somebody to get a return on their investment, you're certainly limiting their incentive to invest in that area. And so the case can be with mobile home parks. You can make the same case with apartments and others, that this limits their incentive to invest.
Let me get another caller quickly in who wants to chime in on this topic. Ashley joins us this morning from Oakland. Ashley, go ahead, please. Ashley, are you with us? We lost Ashley. And we'll try, let me read a couple of emails just to give us the flavor of things that people are writing in. Benjamin writes, if the government wants to provide affordable housing, it should pay for it. Forcing property owners to subsidize it is theft, plain and simple. Rich, though, writes from the other side, I don't believe that it's not justified for government to take private property for anything other than housing use. However, regarding rent control, I don't think we're justified in even thinking about repealing rent control until we overturn Proposition 13. And yes, I am a property owner. Layla writes, as a tenant of a rent control unit and a nonprofit employee, this issue is very important to me. If rent control were to be abolished, I would no longer be able to afford to live in San Francisco. One more caller joins us this morning. Sean is up next. Sean, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to share, I think, an interesting perspective that you know, really shows, I think, what a lot of the property owners are in San Francisco. They're not necessarily the two or three families that are clearly in the business for profit, but they're people that have worked for 30, 40 years to make enough money to actually purchase one or two of these properties and to use it as a means of supporting themselves, you know, in their later years. And I actually manage a couple of these properties for somebody, and I've watched and seen their tenants come in and make, you know, six figures, $200,000, $300,000 a year, and really kind of create a charade where they, you know, come in and try to tie up the apartment and really abuse rent control. Hmm.
Sean, I'm sorry to interject, but we're almost out of time. But I think we've got the gist of your point, and so we're going to let you go on that note. Sorry, and let our guests respond to make their last thoughts on this. Michael Shaw, first on Sean's point and why you think that's a part of why Proposition 98 is justified. Just a brief last thought.
Well, clearly rent control is not having the effect that it was intended. In fact, as the last caller stated, you know, there are individuals of a relatively greater means who are enjoying the low rent imposed by rent control. The issue that hasn't been raised yet, the question that hasn't been discussed is, you know, it's disingenuous for the opponents of Proposition 98, who are the supporters of Proposition 99, to continue to throw up these issues when they have opposed, quote-unquote, straight-up eminent domain reform in the legislature. They have opposed many other efforts to restore private property rights. They're looking to preserve the status quo, and that's exactly what Proposition 99 does.
Michael Shaw, I need to – sorry to interject. I'm sorry to do this, but I must let you go there so that I can give Ted Gullickson one quick last word.
If Prop 98 passes, tenants are going to be hurt drastically. I mean, rent control works. There's absolutely no doubt about that. San Francisco and other cities which have rent control rely on it for affordable housing, for diversity, for their character. And if we lose our rent control and tenants lose other renter protections, then people are going to be hurt and cities are going to change.
To be continued, Ted Gullickson of the San Francisco Tenants Union and Michael Shaw of the National Federation of Independent Business. Thanks both very much for your participation. Forum is produced by Tina Lauberg and Kevin Guillory, along with Polly Stryker this week. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, senior editor Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.